Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today, a two-part celebration of the potato. Part one with one of the world's most renowned cookbook authors. Part two with a local potato expert, Curzio Caravatti, a good friend of the morning show. Stay with us. On one previous occasion, I had the pleasure of speaking with Raghavan Iyer about one of his previous books. He is a master chef and author of several different cookbooks, including 660 Curries. And he has written for such publications as Cooking Light, Eating Well, Weight Watchers magazine. He happens to be an addict. His addiction is potatoes. And that is the subject of his latest book, published by Workman, called Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked, and Fried Too, a celebration of potatoes in 75 irresistible recipes. Raghavan Iyer, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Greg. And this is one of those times when I can say I'm proud to be an addict.
Exactly. Before we talk about kind of the genesis of the book specifically, I want you to talk about just how long potatoes have been such a central part of your life and a source of such passion. It sounds like they were served extensively in your home growing up in Mumbai.
Yes, very much so. I would say ever since I was a child, you know, my earliest memories have always been about potatoes. And, you know, also being the youngest child, my mother would always, you know, I would get preferential treatment, and she would always say, what do I want for, you know, a meal, whether it's breakfast, lunch, or dinner? And I would always say potato. And I think after a while, she just stopped asking. It's like, why bother? It's going to be the same answer. So it's something that has always stuck with me over the years. And so I think when the opportunity came to do a book on potatoes, you know, it was a dream come true. So that was, it's a passion that is 55 years old for sure.
Tell our listeners about the meal you enjoyed at a Turkish restaurant, I think maybe with a friend, which was really kind of the direct impetus for this book being written.
Yes, this was actually my friend and my editor, Suzanne Rafer, with Workman Publishing. We had, this is my third book with Suzanne, sixth in totality, but I remember she had taken me to a Turkish restaurant for dinner, and she had ordered potatoes, which came as a side dish. And I said, gee, Suzanne, how about a book on potatoes? She goes, sold. It was a quick conversation, and we and that was it. And then next morning, I got a call from my agent, and then I put together a two-page proposal for the book, and they went back and forth, and I got a contract to do a book on potatoes. But that is, you know, one of the things that to me was so important is the international nature of potatoes. You know, there's a reason why, Greg, this is the fourth largest crop in the world, because it is so versatile, it is so pervasive, and it is extremely accessible even to the common person. It's a cheap vegetable. It's also nutritionally solid. So from a standpoint of being able to, you know, have been embraced by the entire world, I felt I needed to do justice to a vegetable like that.
You give us a historical overview of the potato, and one thing I would love for you to explain to our listeners is, although we can trace the potato way, way back to the Andean culture, you tell us it's really not until the Incas that the potato, in a sense, take center stage. I think in your words, its full potential is unleashed or something. What did the Incas figure out about the potato?
They figured figured out how to actually cultivate it in ways that were much more conducive to larger crops and different varieties that go well. And they were able to, use fairly sophisticated agricultural tools to come up with ways that they could make the potato survive these different shifts of climate, within short time periods. And so I think, to me, they were masters at doing that. And then, of course, from there, it just sort of blossomed into the world. And that's one of the reasons why, to this day in South America, I think they are just there alone because of the soil conditions. They're able to cultivate over 3,000 varieties of potatoes. And so that, to me, is truly the epicenter of potatoes.
You tell us in the book that there are actually 5,000 or more varieties of potatoes all around the world, and yet we can categorize them fairly simply in two directions, flowery and waxy. And this is something I never knew till I picked up your book, although then I sort of rewound in my mind and realized, oh, yeah, that's right. I think I see exactly what he's talking about there. Explain why it's important to have that distinction in mind when one, for instance, is shopping for potatoes.
Because I think, the starch content of a potato determines what the cooking methods are ideal for those. And so when you think about the floury or the starchy potatoes, and you think about the russets and you think about, the white potatoes that usually fall under that category, high in starch, low in moisture. And I think because of that, those varieties of potatoes lend themselves well for, mashing and for baking and for deep frying because of the low moisture content. But on the other end of the spectrum, when you look at the other variety, the waxy potatoes, or people call them boilers, red potatoes are very common. Fingerlings fall under that category as well. These potatoes have high moisture and low starch, and so because of that, they lend themselves well for boiling. And if you want to pan fry them and you want to keep the shape intact, they're very cohesive because of that. So they're beautiful for that. So they're not very good interchangeably. So you can't take a red potato, for instance, and fry them. You're not going to get the same results as you would get with a starchy potato. So the type of potato makes a big determination of what cooking methods you can apply to those.
You also point out that, although often they get included, that in fact we have to be careful to know that a sweet potato is actually no relative to the potato at all. I had not realized that.
Yeah, the potatoes, for instance, they come from the same family as the nightshade variety of plants. Tomatoes, eggplant, to name some of its siblings. But the sweet potato actually come from the morning glory family. And those, unlike regular potato, sweet potato leaves, for instance, are very edible. And they're incredibly sweet. And they're delicious, even if you just stir fry them. If you have, access to sweet potato leaves, they are very, very good in stir fries because of its inherent sweetness. But unlike those, you cannot do the same with the potato greens because, first of all, when the potato are harvested, especially towards the end of summer, early fall, the leaves are always dried, on the ground before you yank them out. Unless you're working with new potatoes, which are actually harvested early spring, when the leaves are still green, and that's when you yank them out and then you eat the new potatoes. But that's really the big difference between the two.
Your book is full of what are called tater tips, all kinds of sort of bite-sized items of information, including some great advice on how to properly choose a potato and also how to properly store a potato. The one little interesting bit of information was your admonition that we should not store potatoes in the refrigerator. Tell us what happens if you do that.
Yeah, because potatoes, the starch of the potato gets converted to sugars in the refrigerator. So you should never store your potatoes in the refrigerator unless, you know, you want to make, let's we talk about, you know, making French fries. So if you want to make potatoes that you don't want to deep fry, but you want to bake them in the oven instead, at that time, I would say you're much better off than storing that potato in the refrigerator, because then you're letting your starch convert to sugar. And so when you're baking it, then, you know, it becomes nice and brown and crispy. That's what you're looking for. So that's the only time you would. But otherwise, I would say never store your potatoes in the refrigerator. Cool, dark spot, you know, in your pantry is the perfect spot for that. And then, you know, you replenish your stock often and you have the right potato. But if you're privy to actually, if you're living close to a farm, for instance, and you can get fresh dug potatoes with the mud still around it, store it that way. In your pantry, and then that way, you know, as and when it lasts you throughout the winter, and if it's nice and cool, and then you scrub them and you've got, you know, fresh potatoes at your beck and call. So
fantastic. We need to mention that there are 75 wonderful recipes in this book, divided into six different chapters, all the way from Munchies, Tidbits, and Finger Foods, all the way to dessert, and one doesn't often think of potatoes with dessert. I want to mention also the fact that people might pick up your book in a bookstore, take a look at the lengthy recipes, and jump to the conclusion that these are complicated recipes, difficult to prepare. And it's probably really important for people to understand that these recipes are lengthy because they're detailed, not because they're complicated, and that's a really important difference.
Thank you so much for mentioning that. Yes, as a cooking teacher of 25 years, you know, I mean, I've always said my role as a teacher is to explain, you know, techniques, and, you know, there's a reason why we do certain things. And so when they're reading the steps, for instance, they get the impression that I'm in the kitchen with them as they're cooking. So it tells them what to look for, what the end result should be, what's the aroma, what's the color change. And so the explanations are detailed because it's a teaching tool. But from the standpoint of the recipe itself, all these recipes are extremely simple to execute. Some of them have, you know, many of them, in fact, have 10 ingredients or less. And so so simplicity of executing is very, very high, but the detailness and the length of the recipe comes from the explanations that you mentioned, which I feel is important.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that they are there. Let's take a couple minutes to talk about a couple of the most intriguing recipes. I want to start with one that I cannot wait to prepare myself, because I've really fallen in love with chorizo. And so you have a recipe for chorizo stuffed hash browns. And I think this is a recipe that comes from Mexico.
And, you know, of course, morning favorites. You know, who doesn't love a really good hash brown? And I think, you know, when you think about taking the shredded potatoes, and the way it's stuffed is, you know, you have this layer of shredded potatoes, and then I have the chorizo, which is sort of the sandwich layer, and then on top of it, you know, I put the second layer of potato. And oftentimes, the potatoes themselves, the shreds, I mix it up with a little bit of egg in there, so it binds it together beautifully well. And so you get this, you know, almost like a potato sandwich, for lack of a better description, with the chorizo in between, and pan-fry both sides, and sometimes I'll throw in fresh spinach in there, you know, to give it some color and texture and further nutritional value to that as well. And you've got this breakfast complexity, you know, that's one skillet meal, I think. And that's a beautiful, beautiful dish to consume in the morning.
Very good. Why don't I play fair here and give you a chance to highlight a recipe that you think is especially noteworthy?
You know, I am, when you give me potatoes, that's noteworthy, but when you tell me these are fried, I sort of get weak in the knees. So I love, and it's a favorite of mine, you know, who doesn't love a good tater tot, you know? And so I have homemade tater tots, which are cheesy tater tots with fresh tarragon. And it's truly one of those recipes that I, you know, tested and retested about half a dozen times. Not because the recipe wouldn't work the first time, because I loved it so much the first time that I kept doing it again and again. Mm. And it's...
Well, that's how you achieve perfection. Well, let's remind our listeners of the title of the book, Smashed, Mashed, Boiled, and Baked, and Fried to a Celebration of Potatoes in 75 Irresistible Recipes, published by Workman. Raghavan Iyer, it's been great to talk with you, and thank you for this wonderful, wonderful book.
Thank you so much, Greg, and it's my pleasure, and hope you and your listeners have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. Well, now I hope we have your taste buds really activated by all of that discussion about the wonders of the potato and some of these delicious recipes to be found in Raghavan Iyer's book. We now turn to somebody on the local scene that many of you know. He is one of the founding members and the manager of Harbor Market in Kenosha, Curzio Caravatti. And what you may or may not know about him, I'm sure many of you know this, is that Curzio is someone who knows a great deal about the potato and various other crops, and has done a tremendous amount of research into the potato and raised a dizzying array of different types of potatoes, different varieties. He also raises garlic, and we're going to take some time towards the end of the interview to talk about a special event coming up at Andrea's this Friday, in which you have the chance to see and sample and ask him questions about the wonderful world of garlic. But first, we want to spend a few minutes talking about the potato and Curzio Caravatti's relationship to the potato, and just get a little sample of all that he knows about the potato and thoughts on raising them and preparing them and so on. Curzio Caravatti, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg, for having me, and thank you for letting me come in a little early and listen to the interview with Raghavan Iyer and his wonderful book. I was quite impressed by the knowledge of potato that he expressed. Often when I talk to people, you know, they tell me, I buy potatoes at the grocery store, and I know there are white, the red, and yellow potatoes, and that's all they know, and that's kind of sad.
Sure.
And I'm so happy that he didn't even mention that. You know, he started off talking about starchy and waxy, and when we look at potatoes, we really want to know how these potatoes cook. Mm. How these potatoes grow is a little bit more for specialists.
Right.
Or you know, and I'll get to it in a minute, but really what you want to understand is this potato going to cook firm, and that is a waxy potato, or is this potato going to cook flaky, and
right,
that is a starchy potato. And depending on how you're going to use it, of course, you need to understand what you should buy.
So that's the big mistake that most people make, is they go into a grocery store and they probably know what they want to do with these potatoes, but they don't particularly understand that this kind of potato will work better for that purpose than these potatoes over here. They all tend to kind of look the same, and we think of them as being the same. That's a big mistake.
I started gardening 20 years ago. Actually, that's not true. I started gardening 50 years ago because my father forced me to garden, and I hated it, you know, because I wanted to go play. And he said, no, you are going to help me in the garden now. Okay. So when I came to Kenosha, and I was born, as many people know, I was born in Lugano, Switzerland, where land is ungodly expensive. Mm. A piece of land in Switzerland costs like millions, you know, and so most people don't really have an opportunity to garden much, because most people live in buildings that don't have a garden. Mm. When I came here and I found that you could buy a property with a couple of acres and garden, I took the chance, you know. It was a strike of luck.
It was like paradise.
Paradise, absolutely. And I started growing things, and garlic is really the first thing that I really kind of developed a passion for. I've been growing garlic for 20 years. I've been growing potatoes for maybe 12, 13.
Hmm.
And actually, and out of my passion, you know, I started a group. Fred Brookhouse was my first local friend who kind of shared this potato passion with me. And then the internet came about and Facebook, and I started a Facebook group called Kenosha Potato Project. When you're on Facebook, you look for Kenosha Potato Project. And Kenosha Potato Project, as a group, is going to celebrate 10 years next year. It has grown to an incredible blog with almost 2,500 members in 90 countries.
Wow.
I was very involved with this Facebook page at one time, and now I'm no longer because I have 10 administrators, 10 or 12 administrators. One is in Japan, one is in Australia.
Wow.
I have in Africa, in Europe, in Canada, in South America. Any minute of the day, you can go on this Facebook page and find something about potato somewhere, because potato is grown somewhere every day, winter or summer. You know, now we are seeing pictures from Australia of potato flowers.
Wow, and I just brought it up. 2,370 members. Wow.
And all you see is potato, because you become a member and you post something else and you are yanked from the group within minutes.
So nobody gets to talk about Trump or Hillary or anything.
Or shoes or Ray-Bans.
No, okay,
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
All potatoes all the time.
Right. And after that, I started a second group that is called Kenosha Garlic Collectors. And it's kind of funny that these groups all start with Kenosha, you know.
Yeah.
So thousands of people around the world are wondering, what is Kenosha?
Yeah, right.
Why Kenosha? You know,
well,
but,
good for you.
Well, that's where we are. And
what is that name again of the garlic group?
Kenosha Garlic Collectors.
Collectors.
Now, this group, when I started, when I started growing potatoes, I grew them in the ground in a furrow like everybody, okay? Mm. And I own 2 acres. Actually, now I control 3 acres, and my property is getting larger, and my plantings I keep expanding. But one problem that one will encounter when if you start collecting, if you start to try different things and you want a number of potatoes, for instance, to grow them and harvest them and keep them separate and label them correctly is really an issue.
Mm.
When you start having 50 varieties of potatoes, I started planting potatoes in a furrow. I had a blue potato followed by a red potato, then a yellow potato. So when I harvest, they were different. I could tell them apart.
Mm.
Then I started having garden helpers. I'm not sure if they are called squirrel chipmunks I'm not sure which kind of animal started harvesting potatoes for me.
Oh, how nice.
And replanting them.
Oh.
That's what I hated, because now I had potatoes. They were not supposed where they were, you know. And I said, oh, my God. What? You know, when you are a collector, and especially with tendency to being anal like I am, COD,
yeah,
big time on these things. I said, no.
Don't mess with my potatoes.
Don't mess with my potatoes. Exactly. So at that point, I discovered an American tool, something that really only exists in America at this level. It's made by a company in Vermont that is on the internet as gardeners.com. In gardeners.com, you log into gardeners.com and you look for potato growing bag.
Wow.
They developed a non-woven fabric that... And now I own 500 of them. So
of these bags?
Of these bags.
Wow.
So I plant 500 bags every year, and each bag will have a different potato.
Wow. How big are these bags?
The size varies between 16 inches and 18 inches in their round.
Okay.
And I actually then become working for gardeners.com. I am their official potato growing bag researcher.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And so I've been researching how tall this container is supposed to be.
Right. And do these bags go into the ground?
No.
Okay.
So you can actually grow potatoes on your deck.
Wow. So you fill the bag with soil?
You fill the bag I fill the bag with compost.
Ah.
Because the soil that you shovel from your garden into this bag, any bag or container, and you start watering, in no time you are going to have concrete. So you need something that is very, very friable. Mm. And I actually purchased compost from Purple Cow.
Hmm.
Purple Cow organic compost. I just received, and this is the second year that I was able to do that, a semi-load that is 35 yards.
Wow.
And I'm so happy that this year the timing could not have been more perfect for my delivery of compost and covering with the tarp. And a couple of days later, here you go.
Wow.
You know, snow and, you know, that.
Right.
And I have to wait until later in the season so that the ground freezes over a little bit so that I can get the truck to drive up and not sink in the garden.
Right. Wow.
So all of that led to my discovery that growing tubers, potatoes are tubers,
mm-hmm.
in a container has a number of challenges. Because when you plant a tuber in the ground, you are always going to have some level of moisture, right? When you are growing a tuber, a potato, in a container, you're going to have challenges. If you have too much rain, for instance, and the rain collects in the container, everything will rot.
Mm.
If you don't have enough rain or you don't plan your watering correctly, you're going to have drought. The soil inside the container is always going to be warmer than the soil in a traditional furrow like the farmers grow potatoes. So the discovery that I made is, oh my God, not only I am researching, you know, which potatoes taste how, because most people don't know.
Right.
You know, like our author here said correctly that most fingerlings are waxy, but blue fingerlings are not.
Right.
Blue fingerlings are very flaky, are very starchy.
And if you don't know that, you could make a bad choice.
Right.
Hmm.
And you're going to cook a potato in a soup that you think it's waxy and is going to hold together, and by the time you cook it for two hours,
it's disintegrated.
It's completely gone.
Yeah.
Which may be great, you know, because that's what you may be looking for, to make the soup a little thicker. That's what you use starchy potatoes for, to make
right.
the soup thicker.
Huh.
So as I'm doing all this, as I'm growing all these varieties that now I have 500, I actually built a professional-grade cooler to store the potatoes because, you know, you harvest and then what are you going to do with them? If you mm-hmm. don't store them correctly, you won't have them when replanting time comes.
Right.
As I'm researching that, I discovered that these bags actually are going to tell me which varieties are going to produce a better yield when exposed to drought and warmer soil, which, you know, with the future that we are in front of us, you know, we can deny climate change, but unfortunately, we cannot deny the fact that the climate is becoming more and more unpredictable.
Yes.
And farmers really rely on predictability. If you don't know what kind of season you're going to have, and like in California where they have months and months and months with no rain, it's going to be devastating. So
yeah.
having knowledge on how to grow your own food, that's where kind of bottom line of this long
right.
talk is that many gardeners have not ventured into growing potatoes, and that perhaps could be the biggest result of this interview today, that more people are going to think, well, I should be growing potatoes. Why am I not growing potatoes?
Mm.
Oh, because I don't have space. Mm. Well, you can grow them in a container on your deck. So actually, you're not taking any space in your garden, and you're going to grow your favorite varieties of potatoes that you can't buy anywhere else, because I have some potatoes in Kenosha that are unique in the world. Nobody has them.
Mm.
And you can control the quality of your potato, because unfortunately what farmers do when harvesting time comes, the vines get sprayed and killed because farmers really have no use for vines. The vines kind of tangle in the equipment, so all the vines need to be dead. The potatoes are left in the ground for 2-3 weeks, and what happens, the potato starts forming a thicker skin, which makes a wonderful potato for storage in, you know, mountains of potatoes, how they are stored.
Right.
But unfortunately forces you, the consumer, to peel the potato.
Mm.
And when you peel the potato, you get rid of the best part, because the flesh is, because the skin is where often you find trace elements that are really, really good for you, and a lot of fiber.
Right. And tasty as well.
Too. Absolutely, yes.
So it's better if you can have a potato where the skin is not so thick that you can easily consume it, and and then you're getting the best part of the potato. What is typically the growing season for potatoes, for instance,
well,
here in Kenosha?
That's a great question, Greg. If you are planting potatoes in the traditional way, you should be waiting until the soil is in the high 40s, okay? Because potatoes are nightshades, like tomatoes, don't like to be cold.
Mm.
They don't like to be wet, like soaking in the rain. That's how everything rots. So you need to kind of prepare your potatoes for planting by taking them in the house and exposing them to moderate light. You're going to notice how the tubers are going to start developing a little bit of a green spot, and that will stay very short. Often when you keep potatoes stored in your pantry, in darkness, they grow these long shoots.
Oh,
okay?
Right.
Those are good for nothing.
Right,
those
the
you can
eyes.
Rip.
Yeah.
The eyes, well, the eyes, if the potato is in moderate light, the eye will not grow long. It will stay short.
Ah.
I have potatoes right now. I have a very, very rare potato that I harvested very late. Unfortunately, I have a little bit of frost damage on that potato. But I was able to save a couple. And I'm going to keep them for the whole winter on my windowsill.
Huh.
And it's going to be fine. You know, I'm going to start seeing a little bit of a growth, and the growth will stay very, very short. And there will be no further growth until the plant can develop roots. Roots only develop in soil, moist soil. So when you get your little piece of potato with the little sprout, that is green. It's called green sprouting.
Mm.
When that is ready and the time is right, you need to wait. Cool your jets, you know. wait the end of April, early May, and you put it in soil. Immediately at the base of that sprout, you're going to start seeing root development, and the plant will start growing.
Mm.
Now, to come back to your question, though, you are going to get a larger yield if you get a nice canopy. The canopy is, you know, the leaves of on the vines.
Right.
Need to be fully developed by June 21st, when the day are longest, and then the days start to wane. So the more canopy you have before June 21st, the better.
For the plant to be shaded.
For the plant to be, because the potato, what is the
potato? For the potato to be shaded,
what is
yeah.
a tuber? Big question. What is a tuber? The tuber is the collection of energy that comes from the sun. So the more sun energy lands on a large canopy, the more energy the plant can transfer to the tuber and form a larger tuber. If you don't have enough sunlight, if the plant has not developed properly, you're not going to have large tubers. You're only going to have small tubers. And that's where the whole problem with Peruvian potatoes come in, because they are grown at very high altitude and they get a different sun exposure than down here. So that's something that our Indian writer friend has not mentioned, is that the potatoes, yes, come from the Andes, from the mountains, but somehow the people of South America were smart or lucky to take the potato from Peru down to Chile, and the Chilean potato is the potato that came to us, not the Peruvian potato. Okay. The Peruvian potatoes make no tubers here. So we still grow them for the pollen in order to introduce some genetic property of these potatoes into our potatoes, but our potatoes came from Chile. So Chilean potatoes, through the voyages of discovery, were moved from Chile. The Spaniards took them all the way up to Washington State, where they traded with Indians, and we still have Native American growing potatoes that were brought to America 400 years ago.
Wow. That's a fascinating part of the history that didn't know really anything about.
Then those potatoes made it to Europe. And most potatoes that we are growing here now are European potatoes. So these are, you know, farmers and researchers have kept evolving the tuber that is very different from what those 3,000 varieties that are grown in Peru now are good for Peru, but not good for us.
Right. And one of the points Mr. Iyer makes in his book is that potatoes are grown really all over the world, not in Antarctica, but just every other continent.
Well, no, they are grown on Mars. Remember the movie? That is really true. You can grow potatoes on Mars, like in that movie. The movie is, of course, a little bit of fantasy, but not that much.
Right. It's plausible.
Absolutely. And Greg, if someone asks you the question, okay, you are bound to live the rest of your life on an island, and you can only bring one thing. You know, what would you bring? Yeah. You would bring a potato, because that is probably the best food that you could grow, the most complete nutrition.
Wow.
And that's why they picked the potato to grow on Mars, you know, as an experiment. It has been grown in this sustainable, you know, domes that they built just to try things.
If you were on an island and could only bring one of the many varieties that you have raised over the years with you, I guess it's a roundabout way of asking if you have a favorite, or is it impossible for you to say?
It's really impossible. Yes.
How many varieties are we talking about you've raised?
Well, at this point, we should not talk of varieties. We should use the word cultivar. So what the difference between a cultivar and a variety, if you want a variety, is something that has established, and often names are also picked for commercial value.
Right.
So a cultivar is selected and then a name is slapped on it. One of the most popular now is Yukon Gold. Yukon Gold is probably one of the most popular varieties right now.
Right.
And that was developed in Canada by a friend of mine, actually, that was involved with that, because I connect with all these researchers, you know, worldwide. And it became extremely popular because it's so gold, you know, the flesh. But cultivars, I use the word cultivars and I use the word strain. So, for instance, and I'm getting into quite complicated situations here, but a specific cultivar may be planted and harvested and saved for many, many, many years. And at one point, this cultivar may be affected by viruses. And the production of these tubers are going to start become smaller, to the point where you actually lose the cultivar. So there are many safety nets in place, and really I have a note here not to forget to mention, because most people don't know that in Wisconsin we have several research stations that are funded by the USDA as are part of our safety network in America. And the most important in all of America is in Sturgeon Bay. It's so important that it's no longer called the U.S. Potato Gene Bank. It's now called the International Potato Gene Bank.
Wow.
Yes. And what we have been doing, and another big institution that we have in Wisconsin that we really have to be proud of, is University of Wisconsin-Madison, where we have Professor David Spooner, who has been traveling all over the world collecting potatoes for decades, and has brought back all these Peruvian and Colombian potato varieties that we have in Sturgeon Bay. They are put in the lab in as in vitro, and we can and by doing that we can keep them healthy. Because once you start growing potatoes outside of the lab in a field, and an insect lands on it that is infected with a virus, you're doomed. That potato eventually is going to collect more and more and more virus, and is not going to be healthy anymore. And when you have a sick potato, you can send it to the lab, and with some procedure, chemical and temperature, they kill the viruses and bring the potatoes back to health. I have been involved in, and I'm very, very proud of this. You know, I've been part of Seed Saver Exchange.
Yes.
Seed Saver Exchange has 650 varieties of potatoes in the lab. So they keep growing this vegetable in vitro.
Right.
You know, but many of them are sick. So I discovered, because, you know, you put them in vitro sick and they're going to be sick. You know, it takes work to make it healthy again.
Right.
And
right.
I've been able, through my contacts, to discover a potato that was kept by Seed Saver Exchange. And Seed Saver Exchange didn't even know the importance of this potato. And I was able to get the in vitro to the International Gene Bank in Sturgeon Bay, and they sent it out to Maryland, to the USDA, and they nursed the potato back to health.
Wow.
And now we have the Peach Blow potato, which was released. It's a true American potato, because many potatoes that we have in America have been in Europe first. The Peach Blow is not. It's a true American potato that was released 150 years ago.
Wow. And that's back.
And it's back.
Wow.
Yeah.
And we should call it the Curzio in honor of you.
No. It's the Peach Blow.
Wow.
Or the Lumpers. You know, the Lumpers potato is the potato that caused the Irish famine.
Yes.
So we have the Lumpers. But the Lumpers is a potato that is, and that's perhaps why we had the famine in Ireland, because most people were growing the Lumper, because the Lumper is a potato that makes a lot of potato, a lot of volume. So most Irish farmers were just growing the Lumpers.
Right.
But the Lumpers is very much affected by viruses.
Mm.
So suddenly it was affected by these viruses, and they lost the whole crop.
So we are better off to have a much more diverse array of potato possibilities.
And that is very much the bottom line of the mission of the International Gene Bank. The Potato Gene Bank is to make sure that we always have all these different varieties saved for, because they cannot be put in a vault like in Norway.
Right.
Like seed you can put in a vault, but the potato you have to keep growing.
Yes,
otherwise you lose the genetic diversity.
Right.
And scientists will cross and find how from, you know, Peruvian potatoes that will not grow here, because they need to be grown at very high altitude, but still they have those gene packets that can be introduced through a natural cross or through a genetic engineering, which is not, you know, now I'm going to open a can of worm here, because people will say, oh, I hate GMO. This is not GMO. GMO is when you take a packet of genes from a different plant or even an animal, introduce it in a plant. That to me sounds bad,
right?
But having an engineering method of splicing specific genes from one potato and put it in another potato, you are doing the same thing that one could do with natural crossing in 50 years.
Yes.
In a couple of months.
Right, quickly, and you get the results
right,
you need.
Right,
and
then you can see if you have what you want. You reduce the input of chemicals then, because then you have a stronger plant that doesn't need so much fertilizer, or doesn't need so much insecticide, and at the end of the day, we have a better product.
And we're healthier because of it. I can understand now why you're not just a potato grower and breeder, but researcher. I mean, you know so much about this. We wanted, before we're out of time, we just have a minute or so for you to tell people about what you're going to do at Andrea's this coming Friday from, I think you said, 4 until 7.
Yes.
You're not potatoes on Friday, but rather garlic, which you began growing first. So what can people expect?
When I talk about garlic, people are so excited to learn more. There is much more interest about garlic than potatoes. But if you have been interested in what I was saying about potatoes, well, I have a lot to say about garlic.
Garlic's even more interesting.
Even more, yes.
So what will you do on Friday?
On Friday, I'm going to bring my whole collection. I grow 65 different strains of garlic, which I started growing 20 years ago. I was just growing hardneck garlic, and I didn't know much about it. Now I have both hardneck and softneck, and I have them divided in 9 types, because softneck can be divided in silver skin and artichoke structure, while hardneck can be divided in porcelain, rock and ball, purple stripe, marble purple stripe, Asiatic. You have the Creole, you have the turban garlic. And I have samples of each, and I can show you how they look. And
people can ask you questions.
Yes. And
then
are you selling anything?
Or will you be
never sell anything.
Ah, okay.
I don't sell. I always donate against a donation. And whatever money people donate to me or ever give me, all the money that has been given to me and the thousands of dollars I received gets further donated. This money that you will donate against something, and my knowledge and my time, you know, it's very precious. By the way, this is possibly the only time in the year that you have me for 3 hours asking questions about your garlic.
Yeah.
And the money goes to South Pork Park Association.
They are
helping the city. The city is doing a fantastic job readdressing the beach houses, both of them. South Pork Park Association will be paying for the doors, or will plant trees to hide the water plant. I don't know. There are plants that are coming to fruition very fast, because often you need Kenosha people involvement and not just government hoping that things will happen. Right.
Right. Very good. So this event at Andrea's will benefit
Friday from 4 to 7.
At Andrea's, of course, on 60th Street in Kenosha.
Across the street from Jockey.
Very good. Well, Curzio Caravati, I knew this would be an exciting half hour, and I'm so glad we were able to do this to talk about potatoes and a little bit about garlic. We'll have a garlic conversation some other time. But in the meantime, thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we will open with a brief conversation with the president of Toys for Tots, one of the most important efforts to put toys into the hands of underprivileged children across the country. We'll spend most of the hour, however, with Dr. Art Sear offering his analysis of current events as the year 2016 draws to a close. We'll have 3 different interviews for you on Friday, including one with the executive producer of a really fascinating series, a television miniseries on the National Geographic Channel called Mars, that explores what a manned expedition to Mars in the year 2033 might look like, and what sort of risks might be faced and what sort of benefits might be enjoyed. We'll also talk to the author of a book called 1,000 Places in the United States and Canada to Visit Before You Die. Next week, therapist Amy Sprague-Champeau on Monday will offer some thoughts on how we can get along with each other during these holidays, even with those who might be politically across the aisle from us. On Tuesday, we'll talk with some of the folks with the organization Art Root in Racine. Next Wednesday, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. Thursday and Friday, we will broadcast UW Parkside's radio-style production of A Christmas Carol. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea.